Show me the money.
This is the MoneyWeb Be a Better Investor podcast, picking the brains of professional investors on their investment strategies, successes, and mistakes. Your host, Rick Fanica.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Be a Better Investor podcast. My name is Rick van Niekerk, and in this podcast series, I speak to leading professional investors and business leaders about their investment journeys, and we try to understand how they approach investments and how good they are at it. And the idea is to identify a few golden nuggets of wisdom to assist amateur retail investors to become better investors. My guest today is Daniel Dos Passos. He's a senior portfolio manager at various businesses within FirstRand, like Ashburton, Rand Merchant Bank, and F&B. And he is a specialist indexation portfolio manager and passive product specialist. Daniel, thank you so much for your time today. What is a specialist indexation portfolio manager?
Hi, Rick. Thank you for having me. I guess just to try to put it in a nutshell, so indexation-based strategies are rule-based strategies. On the back end of that, we then look to try and replicate the performance of an index and applying the theory into practical and, you know, real-world scenarios. And within that, you know, it comes with common indices which a lot of people are probably familiar with. There will be, for example, the top 40 index within South Africa, an S&P 500 index in the US, MSCI World from a global markets point of view. So it's trying to take those indices, understanding the theory and logic around those indices and applying them in practice to try and deliver returns for our investors. A lot of the time that is perceived as being a passive investment strategy. We just prefer to call it indexation, given the nature of it and how indexation strategies have evolved over the years.
I thought computers and algorithms determined how these passive or index funds work, but there are obviously, since you are a specialist in this field, people behind it as well.
Exactly. I think if you think about it, you know, a computer can only do so much in terms of running the logic and the theory. And obviously, AI is evolving. So maybe things will change in the near future. But I think the human touch and the human element is still relevant. I think if you're just applying a theory with regards to corporate actions and how it actually applies into a real-world scenario in terms of managing your portfolio, some of the theory in the indices versus the actual real-world implications of those events don't necessarily align. And there is need for oversight from a portfolio management point of view. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of things which go into that, I guess.
But let's take a step back. Tell us a bit about your background. Where did you grow up? And did you ever dream when you were young to be a professional investor in the future?
So it's quite an interesting one. I'm Joburg born and raised. I spent my whole life essentially within Johannesburg. I grew up, you know, with a father who owned a small business. From a very young age, I saw my dad as an entrepreneur. Within that, I kind of looked at things from a perspective of, well, if you want to run a business and if you want to make money, you need to know how to handle your money and learn how to invest your returns. And pretty much, I would guess, I would say from my informative teen years, I started taking an interest within financial markets and accounting, etc. So I went and I studied investment management, got an honors degree within that. And then from there, you know, I was lucky and fortunate enough to join RMB around 2007. It was quite an interesting time to join 2007, just before the GFC or global financial crisis, you know, when it started 07, 08 and materialized into 09 as well. I was joined within a local equities operations franchise within the bank. And then from there, you know, I have held various roles. So I've been an equity trader within the institution and then also a passive portfolio manager, and something which I've been focused on primarily from a portfolio management point of view for going on, call it 13 years.
So there has been a progression, and now you are a portfolio manager, and that is a job that carries a lot of responsibility. But when did you make your first investment?
Well, to be fair, I probably would have made my first investment shortly after I joined the bank. I think one of the important things, you know, there is the retirement funds and pension fund type investments and retirement annuities of the like. From a very young age, obviously having come from a background of looking to save and invest for one's future, I pretty much put my first trade on within the month that I joined the bank. I started allocating to investment portfolios ever since.
Is that an investment in your personal capacity?
Yes, I have some investments in my personal capacity, and obviously retirement funds, etc., and look to grow them over the years.
Let's look at your very first equity investment, for example. Can you maybe just take us through the process? Which did you pick? What company was this investment related to, and why you picked it?
So when I joined, obviously, coming from a background of investment management from when I studied, I did try to take on some risk from an equity point of view. Obviously, the market has changed a lot over the years. But when I first joined the institution, I, in truth, actually tried to look to see how I could invest within the company that I was working with. So I did invest within FirstRand. A part of that comes down to the fact that I figured if I'm going to be investing into a company, rather invest in a company where I can actually see how things are progressing, and was quite impressed with the company at that point in time. Obviously, over the years, there's been a number of other investments which have taken place. But I think within that view and that initial investment, what it comes down to is trying to do your research, right? So trying to do your research, understand the companies that you are, or try to invest in something that you're familiar with so that you can understand it. Hence why I started there. There's been a number of investments since then.
It's a common theme, many professional investors, that their first investments were into companies they knew. I've spoken to many of your peers. For example, they would have a Vodacom contract and they would invest in Vodacom when they were young. Similarly with Woolies, for example. So the first investments are not that based on fundamental accounting, financial analyses. And that is a very, very interesting trend. Would you describe it as the way most people would enter the market?
So I do think, and obviously my investment decisions and everything have changed and formulated over the years as I've gained experience. But I do think there is something to be said there. There's a lot to do with familiarity, right? I mean, rather invest in something that you're a little bit more familiar with and that you feel, whether you do understand it properly or not, at least the perceptions of being familiar with something definitely goes a long way to giving you some interest or conviction into actually investing into equities or otherwise. I mean, you know, we're talking about equities here, but I think there's also a whole other spectrum of investments which investors can look into, especially if you're not familiar with the risks. I mean, there is obviously the unit trusts, even just a simple deposit into a cash account or savings account is perceived an investment. And I think, to be fair, for a lot of people, the investment journey actually probably starts a lot sooner by when they open up their first bank account and possibly start looking at a fixed deposit or savings account. But it's definitely something to do with familiarity, I think. You know, the more familiar you are with something, the more you're willing to invest into it.
I want to come back to your first investment into FirstRand. Now, I would imagine that was around 2007, 2008, because that's when you started working there. But then 2009, there was this international banking crisis. We saw a significant crash of most, if not all, equity markets around the world, including South Africa. And that must have been an unpleasant experience, to put it lightly. Tell us what you learned from the significant, you know, decline in value of FirstRand at that time.
So it is an interesting one, and it is quite a steep learning curve. Look, I mean, volatile markets and risk is something which you study, you learn and you study about, but trying to experience it in with your personal capacity is definitely a learning curve. I think over the years, you know, when that original investment had, I was conservative in the view of not trying to put any material investment into anything which would actually impact my daily life or my daily livelihood. You know, it comes down to different people, different perceptions, but I do think that's quite an important thing to consider, that if you are going to be taking on risk, and to also acknowledge how familiar you might be with that risk, to also then be aware of how it can impact your overall livelihood. It was a learning curve for me. I think there has been a lot of things which have changed and formulated over the years in terms of my general investment strategy from a personal point of view. Obviously, it's talking towards some of the products that we run, but I do quite like the idea of ETFs and some kind of diversified portfolios where it does reduce your risk. And I think a part of that comes down to some of that initial learning at a younger age.
Did you get out of FirstRand when you saw it's going south? Or did you hang on?
To be honest, I held on. It was me taking a chance, and I had taken the decision when I made the initial investment to see how it's actually going to play out. So I did hold on to it for a few years. I did subsequently invest out of it a few years later. But the idea was, if I'm going to take the risk and give them the write down, I didn't double up on a position, so to speak, but I figured it's more a longer term strategy. It was a global financial crisis. But, you know, when it comes to the markets and when the market does dip, sometimes it's a matter of just holding on and being willing to stick with the ride, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's not always easy to do, especially when you're young and you're impatient, and losing money is definitely not a pleasant experience. But subsequent to that, obviously you've contributed to a pension fund or a retirement annuity, but did you build a discretionary portfolio on the side?
So I have built a discretionary portfolio on the side. Again, a lot of it comes down to familiarity and with products that I'm more familiar with. So what I did start doing, you know, shortly after I disinvested from my first RAND positions, and, you know, obviously this goes way back, I have subsequently been investing quite a lot into some of the products which I have, you know, directly managed in the form of the ETFs. It comes down to something which goes to a broader macro type of view from allocation and diversification to various asset classes. So predominantly now, my personal portfolio is linked to indexation and ETF type products.
You know, not everyone, especially young people, would look at an ETF or a unit trust because they would believe the returns could be lower than hitting a 100 or a 10 bagger early on in their career. How do you think young people, especially those 22, 23 year olds who, you know, enters the job market and start to build a career and who wants to start building wealth through a discretionary portfolio should approach the split between investing in equities, in unit trusts, ETFs, and maybe other asset classes like property?
Obviously, it isn't a one-size-fits-all type of answer or scenario. And you do need to understand the various personal circumstances that you might be in at that point in time. I do think there's quite a lot to go with it in terms of the general theory of when you are younger, you can possibly stomach a little bit more risk, obviously personal situations aside. And within that, you know, some form of equity or higher growth portfolio, such as a high equity balance portfolio, might not be a bad idea in the longer term. With that, obviously, does come the risk. But at a younger age, you do have time to ride those risks. I think my personal experience was when I saw how bad things can get up front, I did also take a bit of a diversified portfolio view in terms of how to manage certain exposures. It's a personal preference. It's not to say that there isn't something else to be done out there. But I do think it comes down to remembering that investing is, and this is something I also learned quite a young age, is it's more about investing as opposed to trading. And what I refer to that is if you're investing, you're investing for a certain horizon, for a certain objective, and it's typically a long term. If you're wanting to trade and buy shares when they're down and sell them when they're up, that is a very different ballgame. I do have experience in it in terms of my career, and it has actually given me a very big differentiation between the two. Trying to attract short-term gains is not necessarily something that is in the investment space. That's more for speculation. And I think it's something you do need to come to terms with yourself and actually within that do self-reflection and understand how you actually want to take on your investment horizon in the future.
It's not easy to trade. Yes, you can make money, but you can also lose money quite quickly because the share price performance is not as linked to the financial performance of the company as is the case with a long-term horizon. It's a lot more predictable long-term than short-term. In your experience, how many young people are successful at trading?
So it's quite a difficult one for me to answer. I mean, I don't necessarily speak to a lot of young people and speak to them on their personal capacities or where they are making money or not making money. I do think there has been some success. I think it's also just a matter of calibrating to everyone likes to talk about when they make money. No one likes to talk about when they lose money. And that comes from our conservative views, you know, which did change and formulate upon entering the market in a very tricky situation back in 2007 and 8. But I do definitely think there are people who do have relative successes. I think it is just obviously important of noting that, you know, the whole idea of a get rich quick scheme is, you know, very, I think people are often misinformed with regards to that. You know, it does take time to earn returns in financial markets. And yes, you might get some short term wins, but you're also likely to take some short term losses, which also then talks to why it's good to have a diversified portfolio as a core to when you actually start your investments and then possibly as you formulate opinions over the years and get more familiar with various companies and understanding how to read their financial statements, etc., you could possibly look to start taking more risk around a diversified core.
Now for the two big questions. The first one is, what has been the best investment you have ever made, the one you are the most proud of?
So the investment that I'm most proud of, if I'm completely honest, would have been some exposures that I've taken through to our top 40 ETF. it has been a long-term position within my portfolio. It was actually realized, should I say, as being one of the best performing local equity ETFs in the country over the last 10 years. I actually started working within the business around 2010. So I've been in the business for, call it 14 years, associated with that product. And I guess that was one of the investments I'm most proud of, because it has generated longer term returns, you know, over the long period. And obviously, I've got a bit of a soft spot for it, given that I have also helped manage it on the back end.
And the worst one you've ever made?
The worst one I've ever made. That's quite a tricky one to answer. It does also depend on the various times, etc.
You can pick the definition. The one you would really think, maybe I shouldn't have done that one.
So I think where I did possibly make a relative call wrong is I did try to go overweight, and I don't obviously want to specify any particular names or companies just so I don't get myself into hot water. But I did try and make some essentially local equity plays at the beginning of 2021, which didn't quite work out in my favor, largely exposed to the South African economy, which has been a little bit stagnant over the last few years.
Are you talking about the banks?
Well, like I said, I'm trying not to get myself into too much relative hot water. I can talk about something which is 14, 15 years ago, but when it's a little bit more recent, you know, yes, within financials, there has been one or two plays which could have worked out better for me. And just to clarify, it's also always a relative point in time, right? I mean, if you look at it from one inception point to another, sometimes the timing can make a difference. I think, to be honest, it wasn't necessarily the investment that I made. It was more the timing of the investment that I got wrong in that instance.
Have you ever invested in crypto?
No, I've never invested in crypto. Personally, I'm not a big fan of crypto myself. Just given the overall background, I think there's a few pieces to the whole crypto story which still need to be formulated on a global scale just to try to give some stability to the whole idea of a cryptocurrency. For me, it talks to, if you've got a currency, you would prefer to have some form of stability within the currency. You don't necessarily want volatility in something which is being perceived as a means of exchange. And for me, that's one of my overriding reasons for not investing in crypto, because if it is to be labeled as a currency, I would prefer some relative stability on that, or interest rate parity, purchasing power parity relative to other currencies, which for me, that's currently not meeting my objectives on a personal scale.
Now, it's interesting because in the US, there are several exchange-traded funds or ETFs linked to Bitcoin that have been listed, and they are very, very popular. And I would imagine we could see some index funds appear in the near future as more cryptocurrencies are included into these funds. Is First Rand or Ashburton the place you are looking maybe at a collective type of investment product linked to crypto?
So currently within my space, we're not looking into anything. Obviously, I can't speak to the broader institution, but currently we're not looking at something. It is interesting, though, that you mentioned that there has been some, you know, ETFs listed in the US tracking Bitcoin specifically. And I think that also talks to part of my previous comments is, if you look at the cryptocurrency journey and where it originally started, I do feel as though part of it, of the evolution of the whole cryptocurrency space in the market, is about evolving the product, getting better understanding of it, and trying to provide some stability and predictability to that overall, you know, cryptocurrency market. And for me, I think there's still a journey to be had, and there's still a few things which need to be taken into account. But having ETFs listed on the back end of that, to me, does progress you further towards, you know, stabilizing the whole idea of cryptocurrencies potentially, and potentially also bringing some form of oversight or regulation into the cryptocurrency market, which is one of the other things that I have been personally concerned about, my personal capacity. So where are we going to land on this? You know, I don't know. Is cryptocurrency a good or bad investment? You know, I would rather abstain from making any comments as regards to that. I think the important thing is for people to do their research and formulate their own opinions. But within that, I do think, you know, the ETFs on the back end of it is probably a step towards the right direction of getting some stability within the volatility of it.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting journey, as you say. Daniel, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your insights.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me.
That was Daniel Dos Passos. He is a senior portfolio manager within the First Rand Group.
Show me the money.
Mm-hmm.
That was the MoneyWeb Be a Better Investor podcast with Rake for Kneecap. Thanks for listening. Catch up and listen to all the MoneyWeb podcasts on moneyweb.co.za or the app. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.